from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in baseball.
On 670 The Score.
No crying.
You have to make hard decisions sometimes. That said, I don't have an explanation for why, we sort of hit so well in April and we've had, two consecutive months of poor performance. Honestly, we haven't hit. We haven't been able to stretch games out. That's been a huge factor, and we're gonna have to hit. We're gonna have to do that. We have to, break out of this slump, and we're gonna have to, play well offensively. And there's still certainly time to do that, but we need to do that. Obviously, it's an important stretch.
That's Jed Hoyer, Cubs president of baseball operations, talking the other day about his team and where they stand and what they've been doing the last few months. And it's been a rough watch sometimes, and certainly a welcome sight to see the Cubs get the win yesterday. 5-3 up in Milwaukee. Ian Happ, the go-ahead two-run shot in the eighth. Just like he had the game winner on Thursday, he had the game winner yesterday. So two game-winning two-run homers in 3 days. Not a bad little stretch for Ian Happ. Unfortunately, sandwiched in between those was Friday night's game, in which Jameson Taillon pitched really well and Jackson Churio had a grand slam and the Cubs lost 4-2. And that's sadly, where the Cubs have struggled this year, and you heard Jed allude to that, and we'll have some more Jed Hoyer tape here in this segment here. This is Hit and Run, 670 The Score. Mike Esposito in for Matt Spiegel today. We are glad to be here with you. And again, Cubs Brewers from Milwaukee, the series finale follows this show at 12:35, Zach's pregame. First pitch at 1:10 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs radio network. So hopefully, a Cubs series win today, because they certainly can use it. Sitting at 39-45, they are 10.5 games behind the Brewers in the division, and time's a-wasting. Halfway through the season, more than halfway through, they've played 84 games, and the Cubs need to get moving. But offensively, it has been a struggle for the Cubs. The bats that were supposed to be the big bats have not necessarily been the big bats. And, we can talk about it any way we want it, but when you really look at it, I'm going to read you just the slugging percentages for some of your big bats. It's not great. It's not great. And that is truly, if you think about it, the bullpen we'll get to certainly, but the offense has been the main culprit in my mind. And Jed talked about it. They hit in April. They hit really well in April. They were scoring a ton of runs and not coincidentally winning a lot of games. That has cooled considerably here in June and certainly in May. So the last 2 months have been cold. How do you explain it? Jed just told us he doesn't know how you explain it because he can't. But you look at the slug on some of these guys. Dansby Swanson, who had a really nice year last year, he's batting only .220. The slug is only .369. Christopher Morel, the slug .379. He's hit home runs, but not much else. He's only batting .200. Happ, we just talked about and, saved the Cubs on a few occasions this week. The slug is only .422. Belly .419. Michael Busch with a .451 slug. I guess you have to kind of consider that a pleasant surprise, but it's certainly nothing at first base that you're going to write home about. You're expected to have slug at first base. Bush is doing well. He's not doing poorly. He's not doing great either. But the slug of .451. And then the Cub slugging leader, .462, Seiya Suzuki. And it's just, you're not getting None of those guys is having a huge year. None of those guys is having a breakout. I was going to mention it to our last guest, Ryan McGuffey, as we were talking Sox, but Paul DeJong has 15 home runs for the White Sox. He would be the Cubs leader in home runs if he were on the Cubs. He's not, but the Cubs with their the lineup as it is for the Chicago Cubs, it's just not, they're not scoring runs. And actually, I take that back because Christopher Morel does have 15. So he'd be tied with Paul DeJong. So that would be quite a thing. But Happ has 11. Saya and Bush have 10 home runs. But you're looking at it from a difference-making perspective, a war perspective, anything like that. Sean Sears, I don't know if you've looked at this. I'm going to put you on the spot. Do you know who the Cubs' offensive war leader is at the moment?
It's not Christopher Morel?
It is not Christopher Morel.
And it's got to be Cody Bellinger?
It is not Cody Bellinger.
Wow. It must be Sei Suzuki then.
It is not. See, this is what I mean.
See, this is a good question because it's probably someone like, is it Ian Happ right now?
No,
is it Nico Horner?
It's Michael Bush at 1.7. So, and this is of where course, I think Morel is penalized for defense, right? Mm-hmm. And he's only batting 200. And if he's not hitting home runs, he's striking out. So that is part of it, I'm sure. Happ also has a ton of strikeouts, but his war is 1.5. So he's second. Belly has a 1 war, 1.0. Dansby, 0.9. Saya, 1.0. He's also had some defensive issues, mm-hmm. which I wonder if he actually caught the ball in right field, if he would not be our war leader, Saya Suzuki, because of some of his issues. But point being is that none of these is great.
No, and for the longest time, Mike Tauchman, I think, was the leading guy of war for this team, which like is a good thing to have, but Mike Tauchman should be the guy that's like an added bonus. You know, his 120-plus rated runs creation is like added on top of Cody Bellinger's 160 and, you know, OPSing 900, those kind of things.
Right.
And that's not happening. And you're seeing it a lot now where like Michael Bush has to be kind of an RBI guy. Him and Bellinger were on a... I think Bellinger was on a 9-game hitting streak before Friday. Mm-hmm. Bush, I think, might be on a 7-game hitting streak now. He's a ton of hits. Like, combined, though, between the two of them, though, during that hitting streak, like, 4 extra base hits. So,
yeah.
They're the guys that are driving in runs, or the guys you need to drive in runs, are actually the rally starters. And then it's the back end of this lineup that's not getting productive outs or, you know, being smart on the bases and causing a lot of issues there as well.
Yeah, well, and Sean Sears, our producer, that's his voice you just heard there. I'm Mike Esposito in for Speaks. The back end of the lineup, we've heard about the catching issues, which is back end of the lineup issues also. You know, they've moved on from Yan Gomes, so Tomas Nito is in there. You know, we'll see if that works out. PCA, we've seen that. We've talked about outs on the bases. We're going to talk more about outs on the bases later in the show because the Cubs have a distinctive... I don't even know what you would call it. A random stat that you don't want to lead the league in. The Cubs lead the league in right now. And listen, and I'm not trying to minimize Michael Bush. He is a very nice player. He's done a nice job for the Cubs. But when Michael Bush is your offensive war and OPS leader, as he is, that is not the recipe for your team winning the division.
And especially when like he's leading your team with like pretty modest numbers as a first baseman, right?
Yes.
Like this isn't Pete Alonso coming through and smashing 40 home runs for you. This is a good bat, and there's potential there. But yeah, you expected him to be able to kind of flourish with other bats like Suzuki, Bellinger, Happ, Horner, you know, Swanson hitting, and just not happening. It really just feels like the Cubs have to hope that they hit home runs with guys on base, otherwise they don't win baseball games.
Well, and literally, and that's as I'm thinking about yesterday's game last night as I'm, you know, prepping for the show here today, that is my thought. If the Cubs didn't hit 2 2-run homers, they would have lost yesterday.
Right, and they did it in the game where they give up the Trio Grand Slam. Like, it's a Saya solo shot, and then they get an RBI single later from Swanson, leave runners on. They just can't cash in and get that big hit.
That is the frustration with this Cubs team. And we'll play another bite here from Jed before I want to get out to the phones as well. 312-644-6767. Friday night's game is a perfect example, as you just said. Tyone pitched very well, made the one big mistake. And yes, it's a grand slam. It's 4 runs. But the Cubs can't overcome. They're not scoring 4 runs in most games. This week, the Cubs have scored, I happen to have it in front of me, 4-1-3-5-2, and then yesterday, 5. There's no 10-11 run games. There's no easy wins. There's no, yeah, we got 6 in the second, and we're going to cruise, and we're going to, you know, kind of go on cruise control and save our bullpen guys. There's none of that.
No. And it's funny, I Zach Zabin and I, we joke every time we come in, I do highlights while he's working. We joke the Cubs have been playing the same game essentially for 60 games.
That's right. They have.
It's because it's always a one-run game, whether they're winning or losing. It's coming down to whether their bullpen can execute or their offense can score enough runs. And it's sometimes neither.
and Highwire Hector Neris got the save yesterday, although it made it interesting, of course, because that's what he does. I marvel at the fact that he is 7-2. He has 9 decisions from the back of the bullpen. And it's June 30th, and the Cubs lead the league with 17 blown saves. Now, those are not all Neris, but a lot of them are him. And the bullpen is another whole issue, which we will get into in more in depth. But I wanted to play, we have another cut here from Jed Hoyer talking about the upcoming deadline. Because any way you look at it, as of right now, the Cubs are in last place in the division, and they are 10.5 games behind the Brewers.
You know, when I look at this 2-month stretch, you know, I think that this has sort of been a sense of, okay, like, you know, we'll turn it around, and it undoubtedly it has dragged on, you know, far longer than we expected or we hoped, or we need to play a lot better. Now we've dug ourselves a hole, and we have to dig out of that hole. And obviously, yes, there are, you know, it's important that we do that, you know, in this next, whatever that is, I don't know how many days it is, 33 days or whatever we have until the deadline. You have to make hard decisions sometimes. You know, that said, I don't have an explanation for why, you know, we sort of hit so well in April and we've had, you know, 2 consecutive months of poor performance, you know, honestly.
And that bleeds into the cut we played coming in. But that's him saying, as much as he's going to say that, hey, listen, I recognize that we are 7 or 6 games under 500. There's 6 now here at the end of June. And he did this last year, if you remember. Now, we may forget it, but the Cubs were on the verge. They were literally this close to being sellers last year. But then they had that really nice July. I want to say they win, what did they win, like 8 in a row, Sean? Something like that, like right, the St. Louis series here, which I remember vividly because it was the weekend, I worked all weekend because it was Pat's Hall of Fame weekend. Mm-hmm. So the Cubs respond by sweeping St. Louis, right? They went into St. Louis, that was the Talkman game catch, the one where he saved the game in St. Louis. And Jed came out essentially after that game and said, yeah, you know what, we've decided, you know, not to sell. They had thought about it. They were probably going to, but they had played their way out of being sellers. Well, they need to do the same thing right now. Because if you're looking at record-wise, where the Cubs are in the National League, the only teams with worse records in the National League, Colorado, we talked about with Guff in the last segment, the Miami Marlins, and the Washington Nationals, but only by a game. Those are the only teams worse than the Cubs. And this is a big market. Big spending, people will argue they could spend more, but still, big spending should be a contender team. And if they're not contending, and we'll talk Brewers during our next hour with Sparky Pfeiffer from 1250 The Fan up there in Milwaukee, the Brewers lost their manager, lost their ace, lost their closer, they've lost just about everything, but they're 15 games over 500, and they are way ahead in the division. Explain that one to me. And their payroll is way less than the Cubs.
And they don't have Craig Counsell, who is now the Cubs manager. So like it's getting frustrating when you see this organization that's doing a lot more and having a lot more success with their players, despite the Cubs putting a lot of resources into this. So
it is perplexing, and this is with the starting pitching for the most part being very, very good. I would consider it top quarter of the league at this point as a staff.
Right. I mean, just like what you're getting from Javier Assad before he got
absolutely
hurt was insane. And what Shota's been able to do, like, and now you've got Tyone who's rolling, Steele looking good, Hendricks all of a sudden just discovered his curveball. Like, there's a lot of positive there with that staff, but they can't pitch 9-10 innings every game. And your offense has to do more than, you know, drive in a couple runs.
That's it. I remember thinking back in April, I'm like, oh, this team is going to be better than I thought because they were scoring a ton of runs. And now, you know, conversely, and I know, you know, our first caller of the show said he was ready to throw his TV off his balcony in the third inning yesterday. I think we have a lot of that feeling out there in Chicagoland and amongst Cubs fans. So let's try to kind of maybe land somewhere in the middle there as we talk Cubs here. 312-644-6767. Let's head out to Arlington Heights. Scott is up on Hit and Run talking Cubs. Hey, Scott.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A couple things. You know, the reason why you see the success with the Brewers is their top three hitters. If you look at Bryce Terang, he is a great player, a very good leadoff batter, and then you got Yelich and Contreras to follow. I think that the Cubs should do something similar, and you got to hear me out on this. Now, PCA, I know he has a lot of swing and misses, but him playing center field, I was at the game on Friday night. The jumps that he gets on balls, defensively, he is fantastic. If you put him in the leadoff spot, he's batting from the left side. He's got dynamite speed. If you can just get him on base, bat Bellinger second. I think that will open up a lot for the Cubs. Just get Pete Crow Armstrong on base. With the rules changes, the pitch clock, everything like that, I think that's what the Cubs need. And Michael Busch, he's had a great year, but he strikes out about 40% of the time. I don't know about him at first base. He just doesn't look all that comfortable there. So I don't know. What do you think about PCA at the top of the lineup?
Scott, I appreciate the call, and I'll let you know. And you're right. I checked as you were talking, Michael Busch, in addition to leading the Cubs in offensive WAR, also leads the Cubs in strikeouts. He has struck out 93 times in 237 at-bats. Quick math is going to tell me that that's definitely more than 1 in 3.
He's a 33.6% strikeout rate this year. All so right. not necessarily 40, but you know, still high.
It's high, right? I mean, but listen, and I get it, modern baseball guys strike out, but 93 strikeouts does lead the team. Happ has 88. Morel has 75. Dansby has 74. Listen, and I like, in theory, the idea makes great sense. PCA is a speed guy. He is supposed to be a offensive threat, five-tool guy, guy that can hit for power, get on base, etc. The only problem I have with that is that he hasn't shown that he can do it yet at the major league level, and I don't want to draw incorrect parallels, but it reminds me of like when the Cubs called up Matt Mervis and he was just raking at Iowa. He continues to rake at Iowa, I believe. I haven't looked most recently. We'll ask Alex Cohen at the bottom of the hour, actually, as he'll be joining us. But until you do it at the major league level, I am not ready. You can't. You have to have somebody up there at the top of the order, as you mentioned Terang does for the Brewers, who's going to set the table. PCA is only hitting 197 at the moment, 283 slug, 248 OBP. He is not doing it yet at the major league level, and I agree with you defensively too. He is something to behold out there in center, although at times, and we saw it yesterday, he misses some too. He misses some plays that you think he could have made. So it's definitely a quandary that we are going to have to, as Cubs fans, watch Jed Hoyer solve and watch the Cubs try to play through. Kyle Hendricks pitches today, series finale, Freddy Peralta for Milwaukee, their ace. So certainly something, big game for the Cubs, as we will lead right into that first pitch at 1:10, Zach Preah at 12:35. When we return, though, and we will get to your calls, Greg on the south side, Dave, we will get to you guys when we can, but we have a guest coming up next, so please either hang on or give us a ring back after we talk to Alex Cohen. He is the Iowa Cubs play-by-play man. We are going to talk all things Cubs prospects, trade deadlines, etc. Lots of storylines coming up, and this could go either way, actually, with the Cubs, depending on how they play. We'll talk to Alex Cohen next, right here on Hit and Run. Mike Esposito in for Matt Spiegel. This is Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run with Mike Esposito on 670 The Score.
Peralta kicks and delivers. Swing and a drive. Right field. Way back. Ball by. Ball by with the much deserved backflip. Willie Peralta won the battle. Pico Archer won the war. Pump the crowd up, Pete. Pump them up.
And that is our next guest calling a well-earned, well-deserved, after a few brushbacks, PCA with the home run there, as called by the play-by-play man for the Iowa Cubs, who joins us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Alex Cohen jumps on Hit and Run. Alex, good morning, my friend. Thanks for joining.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on. And that was a nice trip down memory lane. That was only a month ago, but yeah, it feels like a day. That was a lot of fun.
No, that was a great one. And I remember the incident vividly. And, you know, we had we're going to start right there with PCA, because we had our last caller we took in the last segment wants PCA batting leadoff for this team to kind of try to light a fire on this offense that has struggled at times over the last 2 months or so after a hot start in April. From what you have seen, and you know, we certainly just heard one of the highlights, is PCA able to do that, do you think, right now at the major league level as a leadoff kind of table setter?
Yeah, I think the answer to that question is yes. I mean, this is a player who has hit leadoff at every single level that he's been at, you know, high school, on the junior national circuit for Team USA, throughout the minor leagues, and now obviously he's had an uphill climb learning how to hit at the big league level, but a lot of players have had an uphill climb learning to hit at the big league level. He's 22 years old. He's absolutely electric. Putting together better at-bats, as you saw yesterday, breaking a 2-2 tie with an RBI single in Milwaukee. So the comfortability is starting to get there. And once he does get on base, he's absolutely electric. He's on pace for like 50 stolen bases, you know, extrapolated with the amount of at-bats that he's had over the course through the entire season. So if you can get that on-base percentage up a little bit, which he's actually had better at-bats, especially yesterday, get him in the leadoff spot. Get him on base. And if he's on base once a game, he's probably scoring that one time per game, because he's able to steal second, he's able to steal third, and he's able to advance the game for your offense, take an extra bag or two, and starting to put things into motion.
Alex, I agree. You know, 15 steals and 127 at-bats. I mean, you extrapolate that, as you said, out throughout the course of a full season. He's one of one. I mean, they don't have another guy like him, right? I mean, Nico, you can argue, is a good table setter and a guy who steals bases and whatever, but I think PCA is kind of a unicorn in that respect. Would you agree?
I agree from a skill set, number one, and two, energy. I mean, just imagine, you know, leadoff batter of the game against Milwaukee, lays down a bunt, third base side, he gets off, then he's still second, and then he's knocked in. That is a complete energy boost. That is a momentum setter. That is a table setter for the entire course of the game. So I think just from an energy standpoint, you know, Pete Crow Armstrong leads off and he gets on base. I mean, it's tough for me to say, but you're probably winning that game, or you're probably putting yourself in a position to take an early lead so you can win that game. And I do think that he's one of one when it comes to that. I mean, I think that speed-wise, if it's not an 80 grade, it's pretty darn close. So the fact that he can get on base at a 310, 320 clip, not asking for all that much, but if he can get on base at a 310, 320 clip, if he can hit at a 210, 220 clip, guess what? He's a three war player. So I think as he gets more comfortable up in the big leagues, I think if he gets more at bats up in the big leagues, if he's riding a heater, hit him leadoff.
Yep. It would be interesting. And you know what? If nothing else, it shakes up things. Craig Counsell has been searching for, you know, sparks and searching for ways to ignite this offense. If nothing else, it is something that would do that, I think, as well. I agree with you. You know what? I have been kind of talked into this in terms of how the lineup is, because Counsell, and I get it, he's trying to protect him hitting him eighth, but I don't know that a guy like PCA, I don't know that he's an eight hitter for you. I don't know that you want him down there.
I mean, I just think that he's hit at leadoff at every level that he's been at. And, you know, yesterday it paid off. I mean, yesterday he had the RBI single, break a 2-2 tie. And obviously you want to get him more comfortable. And he's 22 years old. And, you know, the hit tool is the only tool that wasn't as much projectable as the rest. But, yeah, I think that his comfort, which he showed here at the AAA level, hitting at the top of the order, being a table setter, getting as many at-bats as possible, and for lack of a better word, being a chaos, you know, just being able to create chaos in the most positive way possible.
Talking to Alex Cohen, the Iowa Cubs play-by-play voice here on Hit and Run on 670, the score, Espo in for Spiegs. And Alex, you talked a little about the emotion that PCA brings. We were talking about that earlier. If you saw yesterday with Justin Steele, after a frustrating third inning, but, you know, kind of injecting that in the dugout and, in a sense, helping to kind of spark the team on the win. As a baseball person and as a broadcaster, what importance do you think stuff like that has? The energy, the, you know, having the rah-rah guy, having the guy that's going to, you know, kind of inspire the troops, so to speak. What importance do you place on that?
You know, Mike, I'll be honest. I don't like it. I love it. I absolutely love what Justin Steele did. And, you know, I was reading reports, you know, a couple weeks ago that, you know, Cubs don't have that player who could do that. I've seen Justin Steele as a member of the Chicago Cubs organization for the last decade. He was with the Iowa Cubs in 2021. He was here as a major league rehabber last year. They definitely have that guy who can do that. And Justin carries that weight as an ace and a potential all-star and a potential Cy Young candidate. And he said it in his post game. He's like, I love every single person in that locker room. They know that, and that was all out of love. And I think if anybody understands, you know, loving his teammates, loving the organization, it's a homegrown guy who could do that in Justin Steele. So I love the fire. I love the person who did it. I think it really depends on the person who does it. You know, somebody who commands a lot of respect, somebody who understands what it means to be a Chicago Cub, somebody who understands the meaning of, you know, the fans and Wrigleyville and everything. And I think that explosion of emotion at that time was perfect. They ended up winning the game, and hopefully they can ride that.
Absolutely. And you know, it's interesting, too, because they sit six games under .500 right now after yesterday's win. Big one today up in Milwaukee as they try to win that series, but really a huge month. Jed Hoyer came out and basically said it in so many words, you know, it's put up or shut up time really for this team. And if not, and teams are already scouting and sniffing around the Cubs, and it could very well impact not only what we see up here, but what you see down there in Iowa because of what might happen at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen it in, what, each of the last 3 years. I mean, last year they were a buyer. 2021, they were a seller. 2022, they were sellers. So we're getting to that time. I mean, it's not the beginning of the season anymore. I mean, you're getting to the month of July where the trade deadline's there, and you really have to decide, hey, can we go for a playoff spot? Can we go for the division? Or is it something that we're going to look forward towards 2025 and eventually obtain prospects and get guys at the AA level, get guys at the AAA level who can compete next year? I still think they're probably in buying mode or they're still in analyzation mode trying to figure out, hey, what are we going to do? I don't think that they're on either side of the spectrum right now, but I mean, we've seen in years past, you know, they've really made some nice acquisitions during the trade deadline, you know, dealing Chris Bryant, you know, for Caleb Killian and Alexander Canario, dealing Javi Baez for Pete Crow Armstrong, dealing Anthony Rizzo for Kevin Alcantara and Daniel Palencia. Andrew Chafin was also dealt for Daniel Palencia going to Oakland. So the fact that they were able to do those four trades in a span of, what, 48 hours, 72 hours, and you still are reaping the benefits of that, you can sell and you could get legitimate prospects that'll help you 2, 3, 4 years down the road. But if you want to buy, there are plenty of teams right now that are in selling mode. I mean, you look at baseball right now, there's five teams that are really good. There are 15 teams that are probably pretty average and trying to figure out if they are a wild card team or not. And then you have, what, 8 to 10 teams that are in selling mode, and they have guys who are playing well. They do have bullpen members. They do have position players that could help a potential playoff team. So now's the time.
Now is the time. And you mentioned Alexander Canario. He's a big power guy. He's having a nice year so far at Iowa. He's up and down, you know, with the Cubs. He's an interesting guy to me. What do you see from him on a day-to-day basis?
I mean, he's 24 years old. He's on pace for his second 30 home run season. He had 37 in 2022. He's on pace for 31 this year. He's a guy that can change the entire compass at a lineup, you know, with one swing. If you're struggling and he hits one 450 feet, that changes the game, that changes the series, that changes the week, it could change the month. So I think he does have that potential when it comes from right side, big time power, can change the game. That being said, it's a tough situation where you bring him up and he's only playing two times a week because it's right. difficult to get into a rhythm and it's difficult to find, you know, just a sequence of when you're playing, when you aren't, where you're hitting in the lineup, where you can contribute. So I think that if you expect him to go up there and play every day, I mean, that's just not a reality right now with the way Ian Happ is swinging the bat and Seiya Suzuki, the way that he's swinging the bat and the respective contract situations. And then Cody Bellinger, the way that he's playing. And you want to get Pete Crow Armstrong in the lineup. You just said you want to hit him leadoff. So that right there is three and a half outfielders that you want to be playing every day. Guess what? Alexander Canara is an outfielder. So it'll be difficult to get him at bats every day. You really have to be creative, figure it out. But it's a situation where if Alexander goes up there and plays 2 days a week, that's difficult for him to succeed in.
Alex, as we look at, and you know, we've talked extensively and we will continue to do so because of all the injuries about the Cubs bullpen, what are options? Who are options in your mind? We've seen Arias get called up to Iowa from Tennessee. Who else and what else are you seeing at Iowa that you think might help at the big league level? And it could be, who knows, it could be tomorrow for all we know with all the injuries.
Well, the Cubs just brought up two of them with Ethan Roberts and Jorge Lopez. I mean, Jorge Lopez was designated for assignment by the Mets, and it wasn't just as much for baseball reasons as for team reasons as well. I'll tell you what, Jorge Lopez coming to Iowa, three scoreless innings here, and he couldn't have been nicer. He was tremendous. So I think that he's hyper aware of what went on with the Mets, and I've heard nothing but great things about him from the clubhouse and from other people. I mean, he's a guy who was an all-star in 2022, so if he's 75% of that or 70% of that, you have a legitimate guy in your bullpen. I think Porter Hodge is starting to assert himself as a back end of the bullpen type of arm. Obviously, it's a small sample size, but gets the save in San Francisco as the scoreless eighth inning in Milwaukee yesterday. I mean, he's turning out to be a dude. You got to get Ethan Roberts up, just placed on the 40-man roster. All he did with Iowa was 13 appearances. He doesn't give up an earned run here. The fastball velocity obviously isn't what it was before the Tommy John surgery, but he's throwing a lot of sweepers. He's throwing a lot of cutters. And you know what? He's getting swings and misses and weak contact from that, and that's all that matters. So you took two of them right there. You brought up Michael Arias. He is so raw. Michael Arias, 22 years old. I mean, it's a heavy fastball, 96 to 98 right there. He's a guy that has to work on his secondary stuff, but his last three outings have been really good with Iowa. Two of them, he's gone two innings, hasn't given up a run. Then a guy who really sticks out to me is Hunter Biggie, who we saw during spring training this year. You know, he was sitting 96, 98 miles per hour, wipe out secondary stuff, got dealt with an oblique injury. He missed 2 months. Biggie not only hasn't given up a run since he's come back here, he hasn't given up a hit in a month. He's a guy who's touched 100.4 miles per hour on the fastball. It's two different types of sliders and a curveball. He's a guy that when it's clicking and when he's throwing strikes at a consistent level, he's a back end of the bullpen arm. And then you saw Daniel Palencia here, you know, last outing topping out at 100.4 miles per hour, starting to get back from his injury. He was a little banged up to start the season and then obviously up with Chicago and then coming back down here. But he's a guy that when it's all clicking, he is among the best stuff in the organization. So we brought up the two guys that are already up. I think Michael Arias is an option. I think that Daniel Palencia is an option. And I think that Hunter Biggie is an option to contribute at the big league level this year.
Pretty amazing when you think about it, how many pitchers they have to use with all the injuries, especially out of that bullpen. Last thing for you, Alex, and we really appreciate your time. I'm going to throw a few names at you, guys that we've seen and we've certainly heard a ton about. But you have them at Iowa right now, and you know your 30-second thoughts on this year and then long-term, and those two names, Brennan Davis, once upon a time the top prospect the Cubs had, and a guy who I know we were all pulling for and we've seen twice, but he's gotten sent back twice, Matt Mervis.
So I'll go with Brennan Davis first, just getting healthy. And I think for Brennan, he's missed about a week and a half dealing with some bumps and some bruises and trying to make sure that he comes back healthy. And I think the goal for Brennan is we want you to play the majority of 150-game season because he didn't do it in 2022. He didn't do it in 2023. So you're looking, it's like, oh, why has Brennan been out over the last, you know, week and a half? Well, the fact is, if he's able to come back a week later and he's able to play 110, 120 games in a season, that's a success for Brennan because he hasn't done that in 3 years. So, you know, I think Brennan's still on pace for, you know, 20 home runs this year. He had 5 in a span of a week. He had 7 in a span of 2 weeks. Brennan Davis is a type of player where if he can go on a heater and he's healthy, he can definitely help you against left-handed pitching. He's got a plus arm in the outfield. I think that there is still a future for Brennan Davis and a possibility for him being a big leaguer, whether that's with the Cubs, with somebody else. And Matt Mervis, I would say the same thing. You know, Matt was dealing with some bumps and some bruises earlier this week. He came back and he had 2 hits. Yesterday he went hitless, but he hit 2 balls over, what, 105 miles per hour right at people. So he's the type of player with his skill set where if he gets right mentally and physically, you know, big-time power bat from the left side, he's a guy in the last 2 minor league seasons, 36 home runs, 25 home runs. That doesn't grow off of trees. So you have to give a guy an opportunity like that a chance. He's a 40-man roster, you know, first baseman. He's probably the first guy up if a Michael Busch were to get hurt, if a Cody Bellinger were to get hurt. So I think that you have to give him that opportunity. He's working some things here at the AAA level. And I think if things do click, I mean, he's a legitimate bat that can help up in the big leagues.
All right, Alex, appreciate the knowledge. Thank you for jumping on with us, and hope to be talking to you down the road as we approach July 30th and what happens at the deadline.
Yeah, it feels like it's 30 seconds from now, not 30 days from now. But really appreciate you guys having me on. Go Cubs going. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Thanks. That's Alex Cohen, Iowa Cubs play-by-play. Always great to talk to Alex and kind of put your finger on the pulse of what's going on down at Iowa in Des Moines. And some nice depth there and some interesting stuff, and we are seeing a lot of it already up here at the major league level thanks to all the injuries. So that's what we're going to talk about when we return. We're going to dive into a little bit the Chicago Cubs bullpen, the injuries, what's happening, and different things going on out there, guys that they just called up, and we talked a little about that with Alex. Then at 11 o'clock, we are going to talk to Sparky Pfeiffer from The Fan in Milwaukee. He is the host of Wisconsin Sports Daily. Dive more into Brewers Cubs and what those Brewers are doing right. We'll get some of your calls in the next segment as well. This is Hit and Run. I'm Mike Esposito in for Matt Spiegel today. You've got Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run with Mike Esposito on 670 The Score.
Hector made pitches when it counted in the end. You know, he had to make some pitches, and they had some traffic, and they laid off a couple close pitches and some check swings, close, not called. So, but he made pitches, and he got ahead of Terang and made some great pitches, made a great split at the end.
That's Craig Counsell talking about high-wire Hector, as I like to call him. Nervous Neris, as you may call him. I'm sure we all have good nicknames for Hector Neris, but that was his 11th save yesterday. A hit and a walk, made things interesting, and then 2 strikeouts to close things out. But the Cubs get the win yesterday, and I wanted to talk this segment here on Hit and Run. Again, Espo in for Spiegs. And a quick reminder, a simple way to listen to Mully and Haw, Bernstein and Holmes, Parkins and Spiegel, and everything The Score has to offer is with the free Odyssey app. Follow 670 The Score in the Odyssey app. Take us wherever you may go. You can listen to this show, Cubs baseball, all of that right there on the Odyssey app. But the Cubs bullpen, we were just talking about it with Alex Cohen, the Iowa play-by-play broadcaster. And certainly lots of shuttling back and forth, we'll call it that, as guys get hurt and as guys get called up and then go down for rehabs and then come up when guys, other guys get hurt. The injuries, it's unbelievable, really, the list of injuries that the Cubs have in that bullpen. These two from this past week, Javier Assad, and although he's the rotation, right, but a forearm strain, he's to the IL. Keegan Thompson fractured his rib. Keegan Thompson was a guy pitching out of the pen. Earlier this season, and this is, again, Alzolay. We know about him. He was struggling, and then he was hurt. Julian Merriweather should be back soon, hopefully, knock on wood, hurt. Mark Leiter Jr., some forearm issues. I think it's a kind of a rest and recoup and then get back, hopefully, sooner rather than later for him. But he's on the injured list. And if you think about it, how many times last year did the Cubs win games where you had either Merriweather or Leiter in the seventh, the other in the eighth, and then Alzolay in the ninth. A lot of games during that hot streak last year. Yency Almonte, another guy you counted on, or you were counting on at the beginning of the season, at the back end of that bullpen. He's been hurt. Ben Brown, he's pitched in both relief and in a starting role. He's got a neck injury. Injured list. Jordan Wicks, starting pitcher, but has pitched in both roles. Oblique injury. Injured list. It's unbelievable how many relief pitchers the Cubs have used this year. Some good news, I think, yesterday. We had some updates on that. Ben Brown threw a bullpen, which is good. Mark Leiter started a throwing program. Again, he was battling forearm, let's call it a strain. It was one of those, it strikes me as, you know what, he pitches a lot. He's got something goofy going on there. Let's rest it, get him healed up, and get him back. But Leiter started throwing, and Caleb Killian threw a simulated game, a name we hear a lot about, haven't seen a lot of, but it's possible that we will see him very soon. And the other interesting thing to me, and we will take your phone calls as well, 312-644-6767. The name that Alex mentioned to us, Jorge Lopez, the guy, if you remember, with the Mets, he's the one that said, I'm paraphrasing, but you know, this is the worst organization in MLB or something like that. Like, he lost his mind one day, he threw his glove into the stands, went in the clubhouse afterwards and said, this is the worst team in MLB or something to that effect. And they immediately DFA'd him.
I think I've been looking the worst team in probably in the whole f-ing MLB. So.
That'll get you DFA'd, won't it, folks? That's Jorge Lopez.
But that's how you really feel, Jorge.
Right. But, and you know what? It's fun because you forget, you know, I mean, that's the most recent thing. But he was an all-star. Baltimore, right? 2 years ago, he was an all-star pitcher. I would not be surprised in the least if he is not your closer very soon. It's not, I wouldn't call it likely, but it would not at all surprise me.
He's got at least experience, right?
Correct.
Handling some of those moments, so why not? Because the most of the guys, like Porter Hodges, look good, but you know,
yeah.
I mean, where every save is a career high, you know.
And Spiegs and I have texted about this as you know, various different bullpen discussions to bring Spiegs kind of into the hit and run orbit again, because it is his show. We were talking about via text, like you could slice and dice this any way you want it, but as much as Neris may make you nervous, he is still, scarily, the best option they have back there. We saw all of this on display yesterday. He gets himself in trouble, and then he got himself out of trouble. How many, and I don't know the answer to this, and Sean, I don't know if you could even find this out. I'm sure it's not a lot. He's pitched in 31 games. How many clean innings has Hector Neris pitched in 2024? It can't be more than a handful. It can't. If you've watched Cubs baseball along with me, it can't be more than a handful of clean innings this season.
I was going to say it's got to be maybe we're talking two, maybe, right? I'm looking right now. I'll go through his game log.
He's walked 22 batters in 29 and two-thirds innings. He's given up 26 hits and 14 earned runs. His whip is 162. Whew. He's got a negative WAR. And I know it's not the be-all and end-all, but he's your closer. He can't have a negative WAR. He has a negative 0.1 WAR. But when you're looking for back end of the bullpen guys and guys to close games, and that, to me, one of the keys for the Cubs last year during that hot streak of a summer, which was really starting about, you know, mid-June. So right about now, maybe a few weeks ago, a year ago in 2023, from mid-June through, say, early September, when the wheels kind of started to fall off, the Cubs were amongst the best teams in baseball. Belly was on a heater. You were getting offensive contributions. You were getting good pitching. But to me, high up on that list was you were getting a ton of great outings from Merriweather, Leiter, Alzolay. You could line them up in the old you know, Tony La Russa method where you're working to get to Dennis Eckersley at the back end of a game, or you're working to get to Jason Isringhausen or whoever he was managing at St. Louis. But you had your seventh inning guy, you had your eighth inning guy, and then you had your ninth inning guy. And Alzolay was great, Merriweather was great, Leiter was great. And that is a part of the reason, if you ask me why these Cubs of 2024 have struggled so much. They've just not been able to get out of games. They have 17 blown saves, which is the most in baseball. Forgetting about the offensive struggles for a second. Just fixing the bullpen stuff, if you convert half of those 17, right? You're 10 and a half games out. Convert half of those 17 and you're only a few games out. That's a depressing stat if you've watched a lot of these Cubs games, because this team could be better, should be better, but they've blown a lot of saves, and hopefully they can right the ship. Still, you know, approximately half the games left to play.
Your point here before we go here quickly, Neris only had one clean inning so far this year, and it was just recently his win against the Giants. That was
one
the
clean
first
inning.
Time he had not walked or allowed a hit in an outing.
That is unbelievable. I didn't know the answer was one. I knew it was almost. It had to be close to zero. But one is a very, very interesting number. On the flip side of the National League Central, and in terms of a team where things are going well and the Cubs are playing them today, we're going to check in up in north of the border in Wisconsin at 1250 The Fan in Milwaukee. Sparky Pfeiffer will join us next. He is the host of Wisconsin Sports Daily. We'll talk Brewers, we'll talk Cubs, we'll talk rivalry, and we'll talk National League Central. We'll do that when we come back. It's Espo in for Spiegs. This is Hit and Run on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in baseball.
On 670 The Score.
No crying.
You have to make hard decisions sometimes. That said, I don't have an explanation for why, you know, we sort of hit so well in April, and we've had, you know, two consecutive months of poor performance. You know, honestly, we haven't hit. We haven't been able to stretch games out. We, you know, that's been a huge factor, and we're gonna have to hit. We're gonna have to do that. We have to, you know, break out of this slump, and we're gonna have to, you know, play well offensively. And there's still certainly time to do that, but we need to do that. Obviously, it's an important stretch.
That's Jed Hoyer, Cubs president of baseball operations, talking the other day about his team and where they stand and what they've been doing the last few months. And it's been a rough watch sometimes, and certainly a welcome sight to see the Cubs get the win yesterday. 5-3 up in Milwaukee. Ian Happ, the go-ahead two-run shot in the eighth. Just like he had the game winner on Thursday, he had the game winner yesterday. So two game-winning two-run homers in 3 days. Not a bad little stretch for Ian Happ. Unfortunately, sandwiched in between those was Friday night's game, in which Jameson Taillon pitched really well and Jackson Churio had a grand slam and the Cubs lost 4-2. And that's sadly, you know, where the Cubs have struggled this year, and you heard Jed allude to that, and we'll have some more Jed Hoyer tape here in this segment here. This is Hit and Run, 670 The Score. Mike Esposito in for Matt Spiegel today. We are glad to be here with you. And again, Cubs Brewers from Milwaukee, the series finale follows this show at 12:35. Zach's pregame, first pitch at 1:10 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs radio network. So hopefully, a Cubs series win today, because they certainly can use it. sitting at 39-45. They are 10.5 games behind the Brewers in the division, and time's a-wasting. Halfway through the season, more a shade more than halfway through, they've played 84 games, and the Cubs need to get moving. But offensively, it has been a struggle for the Cubs. The big bats, the bats that were supposed to be the big bats, have not necessarily been the big bats. And, you know, we can talk about it any way we want it, but when you really look at it, and I'm going to read you just the slugging percentages for some of your big bats, it's not great. It's not great, and that is truly, if you think about it, aside, the bullpen we'll get to certainly, but the offense has been the main culprit in my mind. And Jed talked about it. They hit in April. They hit really well in April. They were scoring a ton of runs and not coincidentally winning a lot of games. That has cooled considerably here in June and certainly in May. So the last 2 months have been cold. How do you explain it? Jed just told us he doesn't know how you explain it because he can't. But you look at the slug on some of these guys. Dansby Swanson, who had a really nice year last year, he's batting only .220. The slug is only .369. Christopher Morel, the slug .379. He's hit home runs, but not much else. He's only batting .200. Happ, we just talked about, and you know, saved the Cubs on a few occasions this week. The slug is only .422. Belly .419. Michael Busch with a .451 slug. I guess you have to kind of consider that a, I don't want to say a pleasant surprise, but it's certainly nothing at first base that you're going to write home about. You're expected to have slug at first base. Bush is doing well. He's not doing poorly. He's not doing great either. But the slug of .451. And then the Cub slugging leader, .462, Seiya Suzuki. And it's just, you're not getting, none of those guys is having a huge year. None of those guys is having a breakout. I was going to mention it to our last guest, Ryan McGuffey, as we were talking Sox, but Paul DeJong has 15 home runs for the White Sox. He would be the Cubs leader in home runs if he were on the Cubs. He's not, but the Cubs with their, the lineup as it is for the Chicago Cubs, it's just not, they're not scoring runs. And actually, I take that back because Christopher Morel does have 15. So he'd be tied with Paul DeJong. So that would be quite a thing. But Happ has 11, Seiya and Bush have 10 home runs. But you're looking at it from a difference-making perspective, a war perspective, anything like that. Sean Sears, I don't know if you've looked at this. I'm going to put you on the spot. Do you know who the Cubs' offensive war leader is at the moment?
It's not Christopher Morel?
It is not Christopher Morel.
And it's got to be Cody Bellinger?
It is not Cody Bellinger.
Wow, it must be Seiya Suzuki then.
It is not. See, this is what I mean.
See, this is a good question because it's probably someone like, is it Ian Happ right now?
No,
is it Nico Horner?
It's Michael Busch at 1.7. So, and this is where I think Morel is penalized for defense, right? Mm-hmm. And he's only batting .200. And if he's not hitting home runs, he's striking out. So that is part of it, I'm sure. Happ also has a ton of strikeouts, but his WAR is 1.5. So he's second. Belly has a 1 WAR, 1.0. Dansby, 0.9. Seiya, 1.0. He's also had some defensive issues, mm-hmm. which I wonder if he actually caught the ball in right field, if he would not be our WAR leader, Seiya Suzuki, because of some of his issues. But point being is that none of these is great.
No, and for the longest time, Mike Tauchman, I think, was the leading guy on WAR for this team, which like is a good thing to have, but Mike Tauchman should be the guy that's like an added bonus. You know, his 120-plus rated, you know, runs creation is like added on top of Cody Bellinger's 160 and, you know, OPSing 900, those kind of things.
Right.
And that's not happening. And you're seeing it a lot now where like Michael Busch has to be kind of an RBI guy. Him and Bellinger were on a, I think Bellinger was on a 9-game hitting streak before Friday. Mm-hmm. Bush, I think, might be on a 7-game hitting streak now. He's a ton of hits. Like, combined, though, between the two of them, though, during that hitting streak, like, 4 extra base hits. So,
yeah.
They're the guys that are driving in runs, or the guys you need to drive in runs, are actually the rally starters. And then it's the back end of this lineup that's not getting productive outs or, you know, being smart on the bases and causing a lot of issues there as well.
Yeah, well, and Sean Sears, our producer, that's his voice you just heard there. I'm Mike Esposito in for Speaks. The back end of the lineup, we've heard about the catching issues, which is back end of the lineup issues also. You know, they've moved on from Yan Gom, so Tomas Nito is in there. You know, we'll see if that works out. PCA, we've seen that. We've talked about outs on the bases. We're going to talk more about outs on the bases later in the show because the Cubs have a distinctive, I don't even know what you would call it, a random stat that you don't want to lead the league in. The Cubs lead the league in right now. And listen, and I'm not trying to minimize Michael Bush. He is a very nice player. He's done a nice job for the Cubs. But when Michael Bush is your offensive WAR and OPS leader, as he is, that is not the recipe for your team winning the division.
And especially when, like, he's leading your team with, like, pretty modest numbers as a first baseman, right?
Yes.
Like, this isn't Pete Alonso coming through and smashing 40 home runs for you. This is a good bat, and there's potential there. But, yeah, you expected him to be able to kind of flourish with other bats like Suzuki, Bellinger, Happ, Horner, you know, Swanson hitting. And just not happening. It really just feels like the Cubs have to hope that they hit home runs with guys on base. Otherwise, they don't win baseball games.
Well, and literally, and that's as I'm thinking about yesterday's game last night, as I'm, you know, prepping for the show here today, that is my thought. If the Cubs didn't hit two-run homers, they would have lost yesterday.
Right, and they did it in the game where they give up the Trio Grand Slam. Like, it's a solo shot, and then they get an RBI single later from Swanson, leave runners on. They just can't cash in and get that big hit.
That is the frustration with this Cubs team. And we'll play another bite here from Jed before I want to get out to the phones as well. 312-644-6767. Friday night's game is a perfect example, as you just said. Tyone pitched very well, made the one big mistake. And yes, it's a grand slam. It's four runs. But the Cubs can't overcome. They're not scoring four runs in most games. This week, the Cubs have scored, I happen to have it in front of me, 4-1-3-5-2, and then yesterday, 5. There's no 10-11 run games. There's no easy wins. There's no, yeah, we got 6 in the second, and we're going to cruise, and we're going to, you know, kind of go on cruise control and save our bullpen guys. There's none of that.
No. And it's funny, I Zach Zabin and I, we joke every time we come in, I do highlights while he's working. We joke the Cubs have been playing the same game essentially for 60 games.
That's right. They have.
It's because it's always a one-run game, whether they're winning or losing. It's coming down to whether their bullpen can execute or their offense can score enough runs. And it's sometimes neither.
and Highwire Hector Neris got the save yesterday, although it made it interesting, of course, because that's what he does. I marvel at the fact that he is 7-2. He has 9 decisions from the back of the bullpen. And it's June 30th, and the Cubs lead the league with 17 blown saves. Now, those are not all Neris, but a lot of them are him. And the bullpen is another whole issue, which we will get into in more in depth. But I wanted to play, we have another cut here from Jed Hoyer talking about the upcoming deadline. Because any way you look at it, as of right now, the Cubs are in last place in the division, and they are 10.5 games behind the Brewers.
You know, when I look at this 2-month stretch, you know, I think that this has sort of been a sense of, okay, like, you know, we'll turn it around, and it undoubtedly it has dragged on, you know, far longer than we expected or we hoped, or we need to play a lot better. Now we've dug ourselves a hole, and we have to dig out of that hole. And obviously, yes, there are, you know, it's important that we do that, you know, in this next, whatever that is, I don't know how many days it is, 33 days or whatever we have until the deadline. You have to make hard decisions sometimes. You know, that said, I don't have an explanation for why, you know, we sort of hit so well in April and we've had, you know, 2 consecutive months of poor performance, you know, honestly.
And that bleeds into the cut we played coming in. But that's him saying, as much as he's going to say that, hey, listen, I recognize that we are 7 or 6 games under 500. They're 6 now here at the end of June. And he did this last year, if you remember. Now, we may forget it, but the Cubs were on the verge. They were literally this close to being sellers last year. But then they had that really nice July. I want to say they win. What do they win? Like 8 in a row, Sean, something like that. Like right, the St. Louis series here, which I remember vividly because it was the weekend I worked all weekend because it was Pat's Hall of Fame weekend. Mm-hmm. So the Cubs respond by sweeping St. Louis, right? They went into St. Louis. That was the Talkman game catch, the one where he saved the game in St. Louis. And Jed came out essentially after that game and said, yeah, you know what? We've decided, you know, not to sell. They had thought about it. They were probably going to, but they had played their way out of being sellers. Well, they need to do the same thing right now. Because if you're looking at record-wise, where the Cubs are in the National League, the only teams with worse records in the National League, Colorado, we talked about with Guff in the last segment, the Miami Marlins, and the Washington Nationals, but only by a game. Those are the only teams worse than the Cubs. And this is a big market, big spending. People will argue they could spend more, but still, big spending, should be a contender team. And if they're not contending, and we'll talk Brewers during our next hour with Sparky Pfeiffer from 1250 The Fan up there in Milwaukee. The Brewers lost their manager, lost their ace, lost their closer, they've lost just about everything, but they're 15 games over 500, and they are way ahead in the division. Explain that one to me. And their payroll is way less than the Cubs.
And they don't have Craig Counsell, who is now the Cubs manager. So like, correct. It's getting frustrating when you see this organization that's doing a lot more and having a lot more success with their players, despite the Cubs putting a lot of resources into this. So
it is perplexing. And this is with the starting pitching, for the most part, being very, very good. I would consider it top quarter of the league at this point as a staff.
Right. I mean, just like what you're getting from Javier Assad before he got
absolutely
hurt was insane, and what Shota's been able to do. Like, and now you've got Tyone who's rolling, Steele looking good, Hendricks all of a sudden has discovered his curveball. Like, there's a lot of positive there with that staff, but they can't pitch 9 innings every game, and your offense has to do more than, you know, driving a couple runs.
That's it. I remember thinking back in April, I'm like, oh, this team is going to be better than I thought because they were scoring a ton of runs. And now, you know, conversely, and I know, you know, our first caller of the show said he was ready to throw his TV off his balcony in the third inning yesterday. I think we have a lot of that feeling out there in Chicagoland and amongst Cubs fans. So let's try to kind of maybe land somewhere in the middle there as we talk Cubs here. 312-644-6767. Let's head out to Arlington Heights. Scott is up on Hit and Run talking Cubs. Hey, Scott.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A couple things. You know, the reason why you see the success with the Brewers is their top three hitters. If you look at Bryce Terang, he is a great player, a very good leadoff batter. And then you got Yelich and Contreras to follow. I think that the Cubs should do something similar. And you got to hear me out on this. Now, PCA, I know he has a lot of swing and misses, but him playing center field, I was at the game on Friday night. The jumps that he gets on balls, defensively, he is fantastic. If you put him in the leadoff spot, he's batting from the left side. He's got dynamite speed. If you can just get him on base, bat Bellinger second. I think that will open up a lot for the Cubs. Just get Pete Crow Armstrong on base. With the rules changes, the pitch clock, everything like that, I think that's what the Cubs need. And Michael Bush, he's had a great year, but he strikes out about 40% of the time. I don't know about him at first base. He just doesn't look all that comfortable there. So I don't know. What do you think about PCA at the top of the lineup?
Scott, I appreciate the call, and I'll let you know. And you're right. I checked as you were talking, Michael Bush, in addition to leading the Cubs in offensive WAR, also leads the Cubs in strikeouts. He has struck out 93 times in 237 at-bats. Quick math is going to tell me that that's definitely more than 1 in 3.
He's a 33.6% strikeout rate this year. All so right. not necessarily 40, but you know, still high.
It's high, right? I mean, but listen, and I get it, modern baseball guys strike out, but 93 strikeouts does lead the team. Happ has 88. Morrell has 75. Dansby has 74. Listen, and I like In theory, the idea makes great sense. PCA is a speed guy. He is supposed to be a offensive threat, five-tool guy, guy that can hit for power, get on base, etc. The only problem I have with that is that he hasn't shown that he can do it yet at the major league level, and I don't want to draw incorrect parallels, but it reminds me of like when the Cubs called up Matt Mervis and he was just raking at Iowa. He continues to rake at Iowa, I believe. I haven't looked most recently. We'll ask Alex Cohen at the bottom of the hour, actually, as he'll be joining us. But until you do it at the major league level, I am not ready. You can't. You have to have somebody up there at the top of the order, as you mentioned Terang does for the Brewers, who's going to set the table. PCA is only hitting 197 at the moment, 283 slug, 248 OBP. He is not doing it yet at the major league level, and I agree with you defensively too. He is something to behold out there in center, although at times, and we saw it yesterday, he misses some too. He misses some plays that you think he could have made. So it's definitely a quandary that we are going to have to, as Cubs fans, watch Jed Hoyer solve and watch the Cubs try to play through. Kyle Hendricks pitches today, series finale, Freddie Peralta for Milwaukee, their ace. So certainly something, big game for the Cubs, as we will lead right into that first pitch at 1:10, Zach's pre at 12:35. When we return, though, and we will get to your calls, Greg on the south side, Dave, we will get to you guys when we can, but we have a guest coming up next. So please either hang on or give us a ring back after we talk to Alex Cohen. He is the Iowa Cubs play-by-play man. We are going to talk all things Cubs, prospects, trade deadlines, etc. Lots of storylines coming up, and this could go either way, actually, with the Cubs, depending on how they play. We'll talk to Alex Cohen next, right here on Hit and Run. Mike Esposito in for Matt Spiegel. This is Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run with Mike Esposito on 670 The Score.
Peralta kicks and delivers. Swing and a drive. Right field. Way back. Ball by. Ball by with the much deserved backflip. Willie Peralta won the battle. Pete Croarcio won the war. Pump the crowd up, Pete. Pump them up.
And that is our next guest calling a well-earned, well-deserved, after a few brushbacks, PCA with the home run there, as called by the play-by-play man for the Iowa Cubs, who joins us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Alex Cohen jumps on Hit and Run. Alex, good morning, my friend. Thanks for joining.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on. And that was a nice trip down memory lane. That was only a month ago, but yeah, feels like a day ago. That was a lot of fun.
No, that was a great one, and I remember the incident vividly. And you know, we had we're going to start right there with PCA, because we had our last caller we took in the last segment wants PCA batting leadoff for this team to kind of try to light a fire on this offense that has struggled at times over the last 2 months or so after a hot start in April. From what you have seen, and you know, we certainly just heard one of the highlights, is PCA able to do that, do you think, right now at the major league level as a leadoff kind of table setter?
Yeah, I think the answer to that question is yes. I mean, this is a player who has hit leadoff at every single level that he's been at, you know, high school, on the junior national circuit for Team USA, throughout the minor leagues. And now, obviously, he's had an uphill climb learning how to hit at the big league level, but a lot of players have had an uphill climb learning to hit at the big league level. He's 22 years old. He's absolutely electric. Putting together better at-bats, as you saw yesterday, breaking a 2-2 tie with an RBI single in Milwaukee. So the comfortability is starting to get there. And once he does get on base, he's absolutely electric. He's on pace for like 50 stolen bases, you know, extrapolated with the amount of at-bats that he's had over the course through the entire season. So if you can get that on-base percentage up a little bit, which he's actually had better at-bats, especially yesterday, get him in the leadoff spot, get him on base. And if he's on base once a game, he's probably scoring that one time per game, because he's able to steal second, he's able to steal third, and he's able to advance the game for your offense, take an extra bag or two, and starting to put things into motion.
Alex, I agree. You know, 15 steals and 127 at-bats. I mean, you extrapolate that, as you said, out throughout the course of a full season. He's one of one. I mean, they don't have another guy like him, right? I mean, Nico, you can argue, is a good table setter and a guy who steals bases and whatever, but I think PCA is kind of a unicorn in that respect. Would you agree?
I agree from a skill set, number one, and two, energy. I mean, just imagine, you know, leadoff batter of the game against Milwaukee, lays down above third base side, he gets off, then he's still second, and then he's knocked in. That is a complete energy boost. That is a momentum setter. That is a table setter for the entire course of the game. So I think just from an energy standpoint, you know, Pete Crow Armstrong leads off and he gets on base. I mean, it's tough for me to say, but you're probably winning that game, or you're probably putting yourself in a position to take an early lead so you can win that game. And I do think that he's one of one when it comes to that. I mean, I think that speed-wise, if it's not an 80 grade, it's pretty darn close. So the fact that he can get on base at a 310, 320 clip, not asking for all that much, but if he can get on base at a 310, 320 clip, if he can hit at a 210, 220 clip, guess what? He's a three-war player. So I think as he gets more comfortable up in the big leagues, I think if he gets more at-bats up in the big leagues, if he's riding a heater, hit him leadoff.
Yeah, it would be interesting. And you know what? If nothing else, it shakes up things. Craig Counsell has been searching for, you know, sparks and searching for ways to ignite this offense. If nothing else, it is something that would do that, I think, as well. I agree with you. You know what? I have been kind of talked into this in terms of how the lineup is. Because Counsell, and I get it, he's trying to protect him hitting him eighth, but I don't know that a guy like PCA, I don't know that he's an eight hitter for it. I don't know that you want him down there.
I mean, I just think that he's hit at leadoff at every level that he's been at. And, you know, yesterday it paid off. I mean, yesterday you had the RBI single, break a 2-2 tie, and obviously you want to get him more comfortable, and he's 22 years old, and you know the hit tool is the only tool that wasn't as much projectable as the rest. But yeah, I think that his comfort, which he showed here at the AAA level, hitting at the top of the order, being a table setter, getting as many at-bats as possible, and for lack of a better word, being a chaos, you know, just being able to create chaos in the most positive way possible.
Talking to Alex Cohen, the Iowa Cubs play-by-play voice here on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. Espo in for Spiegs. And Alex, you talked a little about the emotion that PCA brings. We were talking about that earlier. If you saw yesterday with Justin Steele after a frustrating third inning, but you know, kind of injecting that in the dugout and in a sense helping to kind of spark the team on the win. As a baseball person and as a broadcaster, what importance do you think stuff like that has? The energy, the, you know, having the rah-rah guy, having the guy that's going to, you know, kind of inspire the troops, so to speak. What importance do you place on that?
You know, Mike, I'll be honest. I don't like it. I love it. I absolutely love what Justin Steele did. And, you know, I was reading reports, you know, a couple weeks ago that, you know, Cubs don't have that player who could do that. I've seen Justin Steele as a member of the Chicago Cubs organization for the last decade. He was with the Iowa Cubs in 2021. He was here as a major league rehabber last year. They definitely have that guy who can do that. And Justin carries that weight as an ace and a potential all-star and a potential Cy Young candidate. And he said it in his post game. He's like, I love every single person in that locker room. They know that. And that was all out of love. And I think if anybody understands, you know, loving his teammates, loving the organization, it's a homegrown guy who could do that in Justin Steele. So I love the fire. I love the person who did it. I think it really depends on the person who does it. You know, somebody who commands a lot of respect, somebody who understands what it means to be a Chicago Cub, somebody who understands the meaning of, you know, the fans and Wrigleyville and everything. And I think that explosion of emotion at that time was perfect. They ended up winning the game, and hopefully they can ride that.
Absolutely. And you know, it's interesting too, because they sit six games under 500 right now after yesterday's win. Big one today up in Milwaukee as they try to win that series, but really a huge month. Jed Hoyer came out and basically said it in so many words, you know, it's put up or shut up time really for this team. And if not, and teams are already scouting and sniffing around the Cubs, and it could very well impact not only what we see up here, but what you see down there in Iowa because of what might happen at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen it in, what, each of the last 3 years. I mean, last year they were a buyer. 2021, they were a seller. 2022, they were sellers. So we're getting to that time. I mean, it's not the beginning of the season anymore. I mean, you're getting to the month of July where the trade deadline's there, and you really have to decide, hey, can we go for a playoff spot? Can we go for the division? Or is it something that we're going to look for towards 2025? And eventually obtain prospects and get guys at the AA level, get guys at the AAA level who can compete next year. I still think they're probably in buying mode, or they're still in analyzation mode trying to figure out, hey, what are we going to do? I don't think that they're on either side of the spectrum right now, but I mean, we've seen in years past, you know, they've really made some nice acquisitions during the trade deadline, you know, dealing Chris Bryant, you know, for Caleb Killian and Alexander Canario, dealing Javi Baez for Pete Crow Armstrong, dealing Anthony Rizzo for Kevin Alcantara and Daniel Palencia. Andrew Chafin was also dealt for Daniel Palencia going to Oakland. So the fact that they were able to do those four trades in a span of, 48 hours, 72 hours, and you still are reaping the benefits of that, you can sell and you could get legitimate prospects that'll help you 2, 3, 4 years down the road. But if you want to buy, there are plenty of teams right now that are in selling mode. I mean, you look at baseball right now, there's 5 teams that are really good. There are 15 teams that are probably pretty average and trying to figure out if they are a wild card team or not. And then you have, 8 to 10 teams that are in selling mode. And they have guys who are playing well. They do have bullpen members. They do have position players that could help a potential playoff team. So now's the time.
Now is the time. And you mentioned Alexander Canario. He's a big power guy. He's having a nice year so far at Iowa. He's up and down, you know, with the Cubs. He's an interesting guy to me. What do you see from him on a day-to-day basis?
I mean, he's 24 years old. He's on pace for his second 30 home run season. He had 37 in 2022. He's on pace for 31 this year. He's a guy that can change the entire compass at a lineup, you know, with one swing. If you're struggling and he hits one 450 feet, that changes the game, that changes the series, that changes the week, it could change the month. So I think he does have that potential when it comes from right side, big time power, can change the game. That being said, it's a tough situation where you bring him up and he's only playing 2 times a week because it's difficult to get into a rhythm and it's difficult to find, you know, just a sequence of when you're playing, when you aren't, where you're hitting in the lineup, where you can contribute. So I think that if you expect him to go up there and play every day, I mean, that's just not a reality right now with the way Ian Happ is swinging the bat and Seiya Suzuki the way that he's swinging the bat and the respective contract situations. And then Cody Bellinger, the way that he's playing. And you want to get Pete Crow Armstrong in the lineup. You just said you want to hit him leadoff. So that right there is 4, 3.5 outfielders that you want to be playing every day. Guess what? Alexander Canario is an outfielder. So it'll be difficult to get him at bats every day. You really have to be creative, figure it out. But it's a situation where if Alexander goes up there and plays 2 days a week, that's difficult for him to succeed in.
Alex, as we look at, and you know, we've talked extensively and we will continue to do so because of all the injuries about the Cubs bullpen, who are options in your mind? We've seen Arias get called up to Iowa from Tennessee. Who else and what else are you seeing at Iowa that you think might help at the big league level? And it could be, who knows, it could be tomorrow for all we know with all the injuries.
Well, the Cubs just brought up 2 of them with Ethan Roberts and Jorge Lopez. I mean, Jorge Lopez was designated for assignment by the Mets, and it wasn't just as much for baseball reasons as for team reasons as well. I'll tell you what, Jorge Lopez coming to Iowa, 3 scoreless innings here, and he couldn't have been nicer. He was tremendous. So I think that he's hyper aware of what went on with the Mets, and I've heard nothing but great things about him from the clubhouse and from other people. I mean, he's a guy who was an all-star in 2022, so if he's 75% of that or 70% of that, you have a legitimate guy in your bullpen. I think Porter Hodge is starting to assert himself as a back-end-of-the-bullpen type of arm. Obviously, it's a small sample size, but gets the save in San Francisco as the scoreless 8th inning in Milwaukee yesterday. I mean, he's turning out to be a dude. You got to get Ethan Roberts up, just placed on the 40-man roster. All he did with Iowa, 13 appearances. He doesn't give up an earned run here. The fastball velocity obviously isn't what it was before the Tommy John surgery, but he's throwing a lot of sweepers. He's throwing a lot of cutters. And you know what? He's getting swings and misses and weak contact from that, and that's all that matters. So you took 2 of them right there. You brought up Michael Arias. He is so raw. Michael Arias, 22 years old. I mean, it's a heavy fastball, 96 to 98 right there. He's a guy that has to work on his secondary stuff, but his last three outings have been really good with Iowa. Two of them, he's gone two innings, hasn't given up a run. Then a guy who really sticks out to me is Hunter Biggie, who we saw during spring training this year. You know, he was sitting 96, 98 miles per hour, wipe out secondary stuff, got dealt with an oblique injury. He missed 2 months. Biggie not only hasn't given up a run since he's come back here, he hasn't given up a hit in a month. He's a guy who's touched 100.4 miles per hour on the fastball. It's two different types of sliders and a curveball. He's a guy that when it's clicking and when he's throwing strikes at a consistent level, he's a back end of the bullpen arm. And then you saw Daniel Palencia here, you know, last outing topping out at 100.4 miles per hour, starting to get back from his injury. He was a little banged up to start the season and then obviously up with Chicago and then coming back down here. But he's a guy that when it's all clicking, he is among the best stuff in the organization. So we brought up the two guys that are already up. I think Michael Arias is an option. I think that Daniel Palencia is an option. And I think that Hunter Biggie is an option to contribute at the big league level this year.
Pretty amazing when you think about it, how many pitchers they have to use with all the injuries, especially out of that bullpen. Last thing for you, Alex, and we really appreciate your time. I'm going to throw a few names at you, guys that we've seen and we certainly heard a ton about. But you have them at Iowa right now, and you know your 30-second thoughts on this year and then long-term, and those two names, Brennan Davis, once upon a time the top prospect the Cubs had, and a guy who I know we were all pulling for and we've seen twice, but he's gotten sent back twice, Matt Mervis.
So I'll go with Brennan Davis first, just getting healthy. And I think for Brennan, he's missed about a week and a half dealing with some bumps and some bruises and trying to make sure that he comes back healthy. And I think the goal for Brennan is we want you to play the majority of a 150-game season because he didn't do it in 2022. He didn't do it in 2023. So you're looking, it's like, oh, why has Brennan been out over the last week and a half? Well, the fact is if he's able to come back a week later and he's able to play 110, 120, games in a season, that's a success for Brennan because he hasn't done that in 3 years. So, you know, I think Brennan's still on pace for, you know, 20 home runs this year. He hit 5 in a span of a week. He hit 7 in a span of 2 weeks. Brennan Davis is a type of player where if he can go on a heater and he's healthy, he can definitely help you against left-handed pitching. He's got a plus arm in the outfield. I think that there is still a future for Brennan Davis and a possibility for him being a big leaguer, whether that's with the Cubs, with somebody else. And Matt Mervis, I would say the same thing. You know, Matt was dealing with some bumps and some bruises earlier this week. He came back and he had 2 hits. Yesterday he went hitless, but he hit 2 balls over, 105 miles per hour right at people. So he's the type of player with his skill set where if he gets right mentally and physically, you know, big-time power bat from the left side, he's a guy in the last two minor league seasons, 36 home runs, 25 home runs. That doesn't grow off of trees. So you have to give a guy an opportunity like that a chance. He's a 40-man roster, you know, first baseman. He's probably the first guy up if a Michael Busch were to get hurt, if a Cody Bellinger were to get hurt. So I think that you have to give him that opportunity. He's working some things here at the AAA level. And I think if things do click, I mean, he's a legitimate bat that can help up in the big leagues.
All right, Alex, appreciate the knowledge. Thank you for jumping on with us and hope to be talking to you down the road as we approach July 30th and what happens at the deadline.
Yeah, it feels like it's 30 seconds from now, not 30 days from now. But really appreciate you guys having me on. Go Cubs going. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Thanks. That's Alex Cohen, Iowa Cubs play-by-play. Always great to talk to Alex and kind of put your finger on the pulse of what's going on down at Iowa in Des Moines. And some nice depth there and some interesting stuff, and we are seeing a lot of it already up here at the major league level thanks to all the injuries. So that's what we're going to talk about. When we return, we're going to dive into a little bit the Chicago Cubs bullpen, the injuries, what's happening, and different things going on out there, guys that they just called up, and we talked a little about that with Alex. Then at 11 o'clock, we are going to talk to Sparky Pfeiffer from The Fan in Milwaukee. He is the host of Wisconsin Sports Daily. Dive more into Brewers Cubs and what those Brewers are doing right. We'll get some of your calls in the next segment as well. This is Hit and Run. I'm Mike Esposito in for Matt Spiegel today. You've got Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run with Mike Esposito on 670 The Score.
Yeah, Hector made pitches when it counted in the end. You know, he had to make some pitches and they had some traffic and they laid off a couple close pitches and some check swings, close, not called. So, but he made pitches and he got ahead of Terang and made some great pitches, made a great split at the end.
That's Craig Counsell talking about high wire Hector, as I like to call him. Nervous Neris, as you may call him. I'm sure we all have good nicknames for Hector Neris, but that was his 11th save yesterday. A hit and a walk. Made things interesting. And then two strikeouts to close things out. But the Cubs get the win yesterday. And I wanted to talk this segment here on Hit and Run. Again, Espo in for Spiegs. And a quick reminder, a simple way to listen to Mully and Haw, Bernstein and Holmes, Parkins and Spiegel, and everything the Score has to offer is with the free Odyssey app. Follow 670 The Score in the Odyssey app. Take us wherever you may go. You can listen to this show, Cubs baseball, all of that right there on the Odyssey app. But the Cubs bullpen, we were just talking about it with Alex Cohen, the Iowa play-by-play broadcaster. And certainly lots of shuttling back and forth, we'll call it that, as guys get hurt and as guys get called up and then go down for rehabs and then come up when guys, other guys get hurt. The injuries, it's unbelievable, really, the list of injuries that the Cubs have in that bullpen. These two from this past week, Javier Assad, and although he's the rotation, right, but a forearm strain, he's to the IL. Keegan Thompson fractured his rib. Keegan Thompson was a guy pitching out of the pen. Earlier this season, and this is, again, Alzolay, we know about him. He was struggling, and then he was hurt. Julian Merriweather should be back soon, hopefully, knock on wood, hurt. Mark Leiter Jr., some forearm issues. I think it's a kind of a rest and recoup and then get back hopefully sooner rather than later for him, but he's on the injured list. And if you think about it, how many times last year did the Cubs win games where you had either Merriweather or Leiter in the seventh, the other in the eighth, and then Alzolay in the ninth? A lot of games during that hot streak last year. Yency Almonte, another guy you counted on. You were counting on at the beginning of the season, at the back end of that bullpen. He's been hurt. Ben Brown, he's pitched in both relief and in a starting role. He's got a neck injury. Injured list. Jordan Wicks, starting pitcher, but has pitched in both roles. Oblique injury. Injured list. It's unbelievable how many relief pitchers the Cubs have used this year. Some good news, I think, yesterday. We had some updates on that. Ben Brown threw a bullpen, which is good. Mark Leiter started a throwing program. Again, he was battling forearm, let's call it a strain. It was one of those, it strikes me as, you know what, he pitches a lot. He's got something goofy going on there. Let's rest it, get him healed up and get him back. But Leiter started throwing, and Caleb Killian threw a simulated game, a name we hear a lot about. Haven't seen a lot of, but it's possible that we will see him very soon. And the other interesting thing to me, and we will take your phone calls as well, 312-644-6767. The name that Alex mentioned to us, Jorge Lopez, the guy, if you remember, with the Mets, he's the one that said, I'm paraphrasing, but you know, this is the worst organization in MLB or something like that. Like, he lost his mind one day, threw his glove into the stands, went in the clubhouse afterwards and said, this is the worst team in MLB or something to that effect, and they immediately DFA'd him.
I think I've been looking the worst team in probably in the whole f-ing MLB. So.
That'll get you DFA'd, won't it, folks? That's Jorge Lopez.
Tell us how you really feel, Jorge.
Right. But, and you know what? It's fun because you forget, you know, I mean, that's the most recent thing. But he was an all-star. Baltimore, right? 2 years ago, he was an all-star pitcher. I would not be surprised in the least if he is not your closer very soon. It's not, I wouldn't call it likely, but it would not at all surprise me.
He's got at least experience, right?
Correct.
Handling some of those moments, so why not? Because most of the guys, like Porter Hodges, look good, but you know,
yeah.
I mean, every save is a career high, you know.
And Spiegs and I have texted about this as you know, various different bullpen discussions to bring Spiegs kind of into the hit and run orbit again because it is his show. We were talking about via text, like you could slice and dice this any way you want it, but. As much as Neris may make you nervous, he is still, scarily, the best option they have back there. We saw all of this on display yesterday. He gets himself in trouble, and then he got himself out of trouble. How many, and I don't know the answer to this, and Sean, I don't know if you could even find this out. I'm sure it's not a lot. He's pitched in 31 games. How many clean innings has Hector Neris pitched in 2024? It can't be more than a handful. It can't. If you've watched Cubs baseball along with me, it can't be more than a handful of clean innings this season.
I was going to say it's got to be maybe we're talking two, maybe, right? I'm looking right now. I'll go through his game log.
He's walked 22 batters in 29 and two-thirds innings. He's given up 26 hits and 14 earned runs. His whip is 162. He's got a negative WAR. And I know it's not the be-all and end-all, but he's your closer. He can't have a negative WAR. He has a negative 0.1 WAR. But when you're looking for back end of the bullpen guys and guys to close games, and that to me, one of the keys for the Cubs last year during that hot streak of a summer, which was really starting about, you know, mid-June. So right about now, maybe a few weeks ago, a year ago in 2023, from mid-June through, say, early September, when the wheels kind of started to fall off, the Cubs were amongst the best teams in baseball. Belly was on a heater. You were getting offensive contributions. You were getting good pitching. But to me, high up on that list was you were getting a ton of great outings from Merriweather, Leiter, Alzolay. You could line them up in the old Tony La Russa method, where you're working to get to Dennis Eckersley at the back end of a game, or you're working to get to Jason Isringhausen or whoever he was managing at St. Louis. But you had your seventh inning guy, you had your eighth inning guy, and then you had your ninth inning guy. And Alzolay was great, Merriweather was great, Leiter was great. And that is a part of the reason, if you ask me, why these Cubs of 2024 have struggled so much. They've just not been able to get out of games. They have 17 blown saves, which is the most in baseball. Forgetting about the offensive struggles for a second, just fixing the bullpen stuff, if you convert half of those 17, right? You're 10 and a half games out. Convert half of those 17 and you're only a few games out. That's a depressing stat if you've watched a lot of these Cubs games, because this team could be better, should be better, but they've blown a lot of saves and hopefully they can right the ship. Still, you know, approximately half the games left to play.
Your point here before we go here quickly, Neris only had one clean inning so far this year, and it was just recently his win against the Giants. That was
one clean
first
inning.
Time he had not walked or allowed a hit in an outing.
That is unbelievable. I didn't know the answer was one. I knew it was almost, it had to be close to zero. But one is a very, very interesting number. On the flip side of the National League Central, and in terms of a team where things are going well and the Cubs are playing them today, we're going to check in up in north of the border in Wisconsin at 1250 The Fan in Milwaukee. Sparky Pfeiffer will join us next. He is the host of Wisconsin Sports Daily. We'll talk Brewers, we'll talk Cubs, we'll talk rivalry, and we'll talk National League Central. We'll do that when we come back. It's Espo in for Spiegs. This is Hit and Run on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.